Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the September 13, 2020 session, focusing on Psalm 103, verses 1 through 13, Strength for Today. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Bert Montgomery.
And I'm Crystal Shepherd.
Well, okay, so we were just talking before we started recording, and I jokingly said, strength for today, maybe it should be strength for the next 10 minutes.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it feels sometimes lately.
Right.
which led me, I don't know if you guys are fans or have read some of Diana Butler Bass's work, but she has this book called Grateful. Where she talks about the spiritual practice of being thankful, of being grateful for things in our lives. And she writes in it, she says, in normal life, one is not at all aware that we always receive infinitely more than we give, and that gratitude is what enriches life. And so I found that really interesting. And for me, I need some spiritual practices like this in these days. So I'd like to know, what's one thing you're grateful for?
It's going to sound hokey, and something I'm supposed to say as the pastor, but I am genuinely thankful for my congregation at University Baptist Church. Mm. They are such a unique group of people. It is such a unique church, and especially since March, since the pandemic and everything started shutting down, they have been the most affirming, most supportive people to me personally. Mm. But not only that, but taking on, and we're going to do this, and we're not going to rush to reopen. I've got no pressure as pastor to reopen. People are enjoying. I mean, anytime it gets brought up, somebody says, I enjoy doing church in my pajamas. So, you know, it's just we're figuring out how to be church virtually and connecting with cell phones and phone calls, and we're just going to ride this out and be safe for everybody. And I realize I am in a minority among pastors with that kind of congregation, and I'm very thankful.
I'll say in the last 2 weeks, as my family has engaged virtual school, I am grateful for flexible kids. It has not been easy. And that's not a complaint, because I'm where we live, this is important, being home. And while I want them in school, I don't want them in school. So, but virtual school is painful for me. So, but they've just gone with the flow. They've worked at it. They've helped figure it out. And they've just been flexible. So, I think it could have gone a lot worse and been a lot harder if they had not been so flexible, but they've been great. So right now, that's what I'm really grateful for.
When I think about the school situation, I've shared on here, I homeschool my kids, but the thing that has really been beautiful for me is every Friday we do a nature walk and a nature study. Before, the kids were the ones that were drawing in nature journals, but I've decided this year to start one myself. And so it's caused me to slow down. And instead of being so focused on this is what they have to learn, it's kind of like I'm learning with them. And so my drawing is not the best, and that is okay. But I'm getting to look at like the fine details.
Yeah.
I've never looked at the cicada and noticed the shape of its legs or the color on it, like its wings. And last week I studied a cicada. We found a dead one on, like, not the shell, like an actual dead cicada. And the kids are like, don't pick that up, Mom. And I looked and I was drawing the wings, and there's these little lines of like veins, I guess, are the wings. And I thought that was the end of the wing, but then I could see there was this clear, opaque part of the wing that was at the actual end of the wing. I had never noticed that before. Mm. So it's caused me to slow down and kind of observe and take a deep breath and not rush through life.
On that note, Crystal, I follow someone on Twitter who takes photos of fungi and mushrooms in the woods. And it's fascinating because, you know, that a lot of these are very tiny things or hidden away or nestled, and they get in there and light them well and take, and it's just gorgeous. So anyway, I'm with you on that. I want to give thanks for the Waffle House guys. So I've been in Kentucky now, oh gosh, about 3.5 years. And before that, I lived in Macon, Georgia, and I was part of a group of guys that met every Thursday morning for breakfast at Waffle House. And there we would solve the world's problems and revert to our middle school selves, which was never hard. And it has been, it's really been a blessing that during the pandemic, of course, they have moved to virtual Waffle House, as they call it. And they have been persistent about reaching out to me to include me in those breakfasts. And I can't always do it, but when I do, I'm always grateful for their friendship and for the reminder that distance doesn't have to lessen the bonds of friendship. So I give thanks for the Waffle House guys. Well, whatever you give thanks for, I do hope you'll try that practice. I do believe there is goodness in our ability to be grateful and thankful, and it does change our perspective and our mood. All right. Well, we are still in the Psalms, and Crystal, I believe, is going to help us get started today.
Yes. We live in a chaotic world. 2020 has brought about much to fear and to lament, a global pandemic taking life after life, an ever-widening political divide full of hate and rhetoric. Racial injustice that plays out on our screen as we see black and brown bodies riddled with bullets, wildfires blazing in a seemingly endless line of new threats every day. A collective cry rises up to God that we may question is listening or even hear. Then we get today's psalm. Psalm 103 is the reflection of a human who had known the, quote, full measure of the unchanging love of the consistent God who knows yet accepts people as they are and loves them with a love which is not relative to what they are or do, end quote. It stands in stark contrast to the current state of our world, and yet I believe it has something to say to us today. The psalm starts out as a psalm of personal devotion in verses 1 through 9. It reflects the soul of a person who is too full of God's love to contain it. The psalmist is praising God with all that he has and all that he is. There is a recollection of God's faithfulness and forgiveness of all the psalmist's shortcomings, a healing of the diseases that afflict him, rescuing from death and destruction, and all while encircling him with love and mercy. There is a sense of gratitude for all that God has done in the life of the psalmist. And I don't know about you, but I could use that right now. It makes me think of something that a good friend encouraged me to do. The last 2 years have been such a struggle for me personally. I have mentioned before that 2018 was a year of many losses, and that bled into a 2019 that was probably the most difficult of my life to date. In the depths of my loss, anger, frustration, and sadness, this friend suggested that I start a gratitude journal. What I found was keeping the journal helped me on those difficult days, and it kept my focus on what was good in the midst of so much bad. And this psalm comes at such a time for me, a time when it is scary and uncertain, and I need to be reminded of all that is good. God is the one who satisfies you with good as long as you live, so that your youth is renewed like the eagles. God's steadfast love can be known even in, and especially in, times such as these. In verse 6, the psalmist turns to God's infinite justice for the oppressed. When we cry out for justice in a world that seems hell-bent on injustice, God answers. When all we see is guns brandished, people dying, those in charge abdicating responsibility, or even a grain of compassion, we are reminded that God is just. God sees. God knows. God will vindicate. God is compassionate and merciful, slow to anger, forgiving, full of unchanging love. God doesn't judge. God removes all our transgressions as far as the east is from the west, and they will never meet. All this reminds the congregation that God is present for them, even in the midst of both their transgressions and their oppression. They are reminded in verse 14 that even though humankind is fleeting and impermanent, God and God's love is never ending, even as high as the limitless heavens are above the earth. And this is perhaps the most encouraging to me. I've been overwhelmed by all I have seen and heard. Video after video of black and brown people being shot and killed with no one to answer for it and no justice to be found. I wonder how long, God. What can we do, God? This psalm is a reminder that God knows us and our fragility. It is God's breath that animates these chunks of dirt and finds us beautiful and worthy of love. It is an infinite God who knows the pain, knows the injustice, and who promises that God's steadfast love is what will last, and that love, that love, is powerful enough to break the chains of inequality, to extinguish the fires of hatred, and to mend the fabric of humanity, welcoming us to the true kingdom of God. And with that, I invite you to say, bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me. Bless his holy name.
Thank you for that, Crystal. And thank you in particular for the way you kind of wrapped up your comments there by reminding us of the first part of the psalm. One of the things about the psalms that I really like is whether or not each one was intended to be sung. There's this musicality, right, to the rhythm and verse. And I really like to listen to music. If you could see my office where I'm recording right now, I have this large stereo system over here, and my chair placed right across from it. And I, when I'm working, if I can, I've got music playing. And there's something about the mystery that comes with good poetry, with good verse, with good music, that that's so different than speaking propositions, of speaking statements that are true or false. And I guess the reason I'm going to that is you were talking about how long, oh God, how long until something happens? We know what God is like, but when is this going to change? When is it going to get better? And I guess I want to cling in some ways to that mystery that the psalm embodies in its verse, in its musicality, that we don't know how God is going to work, or when God is going to work, or frankly, God could already be well at work and we're just unaware. So I don't know. I don't know if any of that makes sense or not, but I guess my point is I appreciate the Psalms' trust in God and God's work. And I think the fact that I don't know what that's going to look like is a good thing. That mystery gives me hope.
I agree, obviously, with everything that has been said. And Crystal, your intro was wonderful. But I have trouble sometimes, especially in times like these, with giving thanks and with finding a way to bless the Lord with all that's within me, because sometimes there's not a whole lot within me, to be honest. And I'll tell you why, especially in times like these, with a heightened awareness of my privilege of a white guy. I may have shared this with y'all, I may not, but earlier this year, I was pulled over for driving a stolen car. The car I was driving, by the way, I did not steal a car. I had rented a car from a well-known...
That's important detail.
Yeah. I rented a car from my well-known national brand rental car agency, and the agent wrote down the wrong number and model from what they gave me. So then, like 2 days later, my car is not showing up as being rented. And so they look for it on the lot. It's not there. Obviously, it's been stolen. So the rental car company reported my car stolen. I'm crossing a state line. And sure enough, there, you know, all these little cameras everywhere, right?
Right.
Well, they take pictures of our license plates all the time. And apparently, it's not just the if you're speeding, they're taking pictures of your license plates. Because suddenly when I cross the state line, 2 miles later, there are three police cars waiting in the median. And then like 2 seconds later, I mean, literally 2 seconds later, we are boxed in, a cop car in front of us, a cop car behind us, a cop car on the side. And they are pulling us. Literally, to avoid being hit, I'm hitting to slam on my brakes because the car in front of me is stopping. The car on the left is swerving me over, pulling us over. We've got to get out of the car. I do. My wife is told to stay in the car. But, you know, I rolled down the window. And Jency, when she saw the lights were on, she looked over and said, well, you're not speeding. Because she looked over to see how fast. She wanted to know how fast I was going to get a ticket for. You're not speeding. And so I roll the window down. And from behind, you know, I'm waiting. And I see an officer coming up from behind. And I'm waiting for him to come up. And he's yelling, you're going to have to get out of the car. He's yelling like this. And was I speeding, sir? You're going to have to get out of the car. So all this goes on. I get it. And this is going way too much into this. But it turns out, I mean, after 45 minutes, they are able to take my word for it that I'm not a car thief. I've got the rental car papers with me in my dashboard, even though they can't get in touch with anybody at the rental car company because it's like 10 o'clock at night. They take my word for it. The only thing I can assume is I don't fit the description. Somebody who would steal a car. We get back in the car. I get back in the car. Jency's been in the car for 45 minutes with nobody talking to her, not knowing what's going on. But after we catch our breath, the first thing I say is, I can't imagine if I was black. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do I give thanks that I'm not black? Mm. That I did not get punched? I got roughly handled a few times, you know, because they do the frisking, but... You know, once they assumed I was not what they were expecting, and then I've got all this paperwork and my license, and they run the checks on me and all that stuff, they lightened up. Do I give thanks that I'm not black? That's not right to me. I mean, I can't do that. I have privilege. I recognize that I'm fortunate. But, you know, there's an old song and an old phrase that goes way back, there but for the grace of God go I. And I used to use that a lot in my 20s, but I don't like that anymore. Am I somehow to give thanks because I'm okay and all these other people who are being shot? simply because it's going to be assumed a black guy gets out of a car, it's stolen, if it's been reported stolen. Mm-hmm. And if he asks why, he's resisting arrest, right? I have trouble sometimes giving thanks for the things I have because I realize so many people don't have the privilege I have, and I feel guilt about it. Mm. And I feel guilt giving blessings for all that I have with them because sometimes I feel drained within for everyone else. I don't know what to do with that, and I don't know what to do with that in the context of this podcast. Mm. So I'm going to give it to you.
Well, I think for me, it's holding them in tandem, I guess, the gratefulness. And let me be clear, most of the time, the most tangible thing I'm grateful for is food. the food that I cook.
Why is that funny?
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Like, that just makes sense to me.
I give thanks for pizza all the time.
Yes, exactly. but no, what you're saying, Bert, like I think it's holding them in tandem. It is realizing that I am grateful for things in my life, but realizing also that I am privileged and that there are other people that don't have, and that what am I called to do in light of that? And I recently shared about having difficult conversations with my children about black people being shot, about shooting a gun violence at our mall recently, about what's going on in the world. And I think that's what I'm saying is like I'm thankful that I get to have those conversations with my kids, but I also am really aware that that comes from an immense place of privilege. That's not the same conversation that my black friends are having with their kids.
Yeah.
It's not the same conversation. And so it requires me to do something to change an attitude, to do something, to volunteer, to do whatever I can, but also be grateful, not for what I have that other people don't have, but just be grateful for what I see in my life. Like one day, I think I wrote, I was grateful for the sunrise. I got another sunrise. You know what I'm saying? So I think you can hold them in tandem. I think it's a hard place to be, though. I think it's a really hard place to be.
Being grateful, what you're saying, and I think, I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to express this correctly. What you're saying, and I think this has been my experience when I've processed it, blessing the Lord with all that's within me, being that kind of grateful about what I have lessens my need to judge others and has helped me be more generous to others, whether or not others think they deserve it, or even if I think they deserve it. Being grateful for mercy and grace in my life has enabled me to be much more merciful and graceful to others, whether or not they've asked for it, whether or not they've deserved it. I don't know if that was what you were getting at. And it's not really, but that's one of the areas I went to. It leads to action. It's not simply about, oh, I feel good. God's been so good to me. It's not me-centered. It somehow leads to us-centered.
It shifts your perspective. I think that's the thing.
This has been such a good conversation. And listening to all of you talk about this helps me understand why I struggled to write about this one so much for the curriculum. It really was a struggle for me. And I think it's because it was a little bit different for me. It wasn't this kind of guilt over feeling, I don't know that that's the word you use, Bert, but like this kind of, how do I deal with, you know, the good in my life when I know there are other people who don't have that. But it was challenging because I think it feels like it betrays in some way the hardship that other people are having, and even like the hardship that I feel, right? Like, I have been affected by this pandemic. I feel all kinds of painful, hard things when I watch the news and I think about my friends and how they're hurting. And so everything feels really heavy. And to give thanks feels a little bit like a betrayal to the reality of that. But when I think about this particular, as I was reading some of the commentary on Psalm 103, the way this probably was used would have been in a worship service of some kind, and it would have come in the middle when it's almost like giving testimony, like, you know, we all grew up in good Southern Baptist churches, and like that testimony, you know, giving a witness was an important part. And this was an opportunity for someone to sing their gratitude for something that they have come through. So maybe they were sick and God brought them through, or maybe they felt they had, it could also have been sin. And then, so they're giving thanks for God's grace and mercy in response to that sin. Giving thanks for the way God is working, I don't think has to betray the very real pain and challenge that we feel. But I do think that it can give us energy to move through those hard times. And whether moving through those hard times means that we need to figure out how to endure hardship that comes our way, or if it's learning how to use our privilege in a hard space to be helpful and to move things toward something that's better for the whole. Giving thanks can restore energy that we need to do that. One other thing I was reading in the African-American commentary online about, it's the African-American Bible commentary, I think is what it's called. The African-American Lectionary. That's what it is, which is a great site, a great resource. And so I went and I looked at how they used this psalm. And this psalm actually comes up on a week in their cycle in which they, it's called like Cancer Awareness Week. in the African American church. And it's something that they focus on because it was an issue that was affecting so many African Americans. So we need to talk about cancer. We need to remind everybody to go and get tests and take care of themselves and all of those kinds of things. But this is used as something that helps carry people through that hard illness. And the challenges that they face. And reading that, really, I thought, they don't use this after. They use it in the week when they're focusing on it. And so I think there is something to finding a way to say, bless the Lord, oh my soul, even when it feels really hard. It feels like it's almost more important to do that when it's hard than when it's not. I don't know.
Yeah. I think that's what I was trying to say when I was talking about the gratitude journal.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a crappy couple of years and I was just like, how can you ask me to say thank you? Like, how can you ask me to like start listing in my early list for literally like one or two things. And some days they're shorter. But I was aware of what was going on in my life. I was aware of how crappy it was, but it helped me, like I said, shift my perspective beyond those circumstances, beyond that pain, to be able to go, and yet there is still hope. And yet I still see the sunrise. And yet I still see the smile in my child's face. And yet I still see this particular situation and how it is unfolded in such a beautiful way. And so that's what I think I mean about holding it in tandem. It's helping you kind of like get, like you said, Nikki, get through that hard time.
Yeah. I have a friend who talked to me about this, and she dealt with quite a bit of anxiety, and she said that a practice she learned when the anxiety got really heavy was to just look around her and like place her hand on whatever's closest and say thank you. So like if it's when she's laying in her bed at night, it's thank you for a soft pillow. Thank you for a warm blanket. And so like then start. And so these are hard, tangible things that you can experience in the moment. And she said it would always calm her anxiety down and make it where then she can move on to be productive and do the things that she needs to do for the day. And I thought that was just I thought about that a lot, too, as I was reading through this psalm and listening to the psalmist's gratitude and thinking, you know, expressing gratitude for those things, whether it's, you know, a soft pillow or it's, I'm glad I came out of that stolen car story. Okay. Right. Like, but giving gratitude for all of that is something that can help kind of pull ourselves out of a fear cycle or an anxiety cycle. And it kind of helps us raise our eyes and look up a little, you know, and see beyond this moment or this circumstance or experience that we're in.
Yeah. Listening to y'all speak reminds me of that verse from Job. And I don't want to get into theodicy and Calvinism and all that stuff, but just the simple appreciation, the simple release, the Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Blessed be the name of the Lord.
So Henry Nouwen writes about gratitude a good bit, and in particular in a book that you ought to read if you haven't, called Spiritual Formation. And interesting, one of the places he gets at some of the complexity of gratitude that we've been struggling with, I think, that, you know, as we've described, it's not just a simple thing to practice gratitude. There's guilt involved. There's a multitude of other feelings. And there's also just the energy to be grateful, right? Mm-hmm. And we've talked about how, 2020 has been so draining, and how we know we have months to go in this pandemic and in the just general turmoil of our world. How in the world do we move forward? how in the world do we practice our spirituality in ways that bring health and goodness and help us face this moment? So I just want to read a little bit of what Henry Nouwen writes. And he does this, he frames it as saying the opposite of gratitude is resentment. Mm-hmm. The opposite of gratitude is resentment. Mm. And he goes on, he says, gratitude is at the heart of celebration and ministry. When I think about what it means to live and act in the name of Jesus, I realize that what I have to offer to others is not my intelligence, skill, power, influence, or connections, but my own human brokenness, through which the love of God can manifest itself. Ministry is entering with our human brokenness into communion with others and speaking a word of hope. The great paradox of ministry is that when we minister in our weakness, we receive from those to whom we go. The more in touch we are with our own need for healing and salvation, the more open we are to receiving in gratitude what others have to offer us. Mm. Moving away from resentment requires moving towards something more life-giving, and that something is the attitude of gratitude. Resentment blocks action. Gratitude lets us move forward toward new possibilities. Resentments make us cling to negative feelings, but gratitude allows us to let go. Resentment makes us prisoners of our passions. Gratitude helps us to transcend our compulsions, to follow our vocation. Resentment exhausts us by complicated jealousies and ambiguities, stirring up destructive desires for revenge. Gratitude takes our fatigue away and gives us new vitality and enthusiasm. Resentment entangles us in endless distractions, pulling us down to banal preoccupations. Gratitude anchors our deepest self beyond this world and allows us to be involved without losing ourselves. May we all work to practice gratitude in these days. I'm grateful for each of you and this conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about our Faith Element Bible study curriculum at faithelement.net. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.